welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @RedRock_BBall, Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball, email RedRockFantasyBasketball@gmail.com, and the new YouTube channel, which you can find the links to throughout Twitter and on Facebook, and on the website you'll see a little link for YouTube up the top. So check out the videos that are happening over there, including one that I did a couple of days back. The top 7 unsigned NBA draft picks for all you guys in deep dynasty leagues, including the people who are in the Red Rock Dynasty League. So congratulations to you guys who are in that league at this point. Back today, though, with another of the Season in Review podcasts. I'm going to be tackling the Toronto Raptors today. In the Matrix, you picked a different pill. You about to see how far to Paul Rosenberg go. The height of my game is like a DeMar Rosen vertical. No one understands me. Only one sicker than me is him. Yes, the Toronto Raptors, a team that promised so much, delivered so little when it all came down to it at the end, they were putrid. And you all know my thoughts on Dwayne Casey. I'm shocked that he still has a job. He's inept. I don't want people to lose their job necessarily, but he shouldn't be holding such a high profile, high paying job when he doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know, and runs lineups out where Tyler Hans was getting more minutes than Jonas Valanciunas. That's all I pretty much have to say about that. The Raptors roster, though, when you look at it, it's not that exciting. They've got a bit of flexibility coming up, though. 6 guys unrestricted free agents this offseason, and there's pretty decent chunks of money coming off some of these contracts as well. Now, some of them they may try and re-sign, but they're going to be left with a little bit of cap space. I think it's not bleak, definitely, in Toronto. They look like they'll be a playoff team again, but maybe not to the same level that they were this season. Although, you never know. The Toronto Raptors need people to take a step, and we need Dwayne Casey to understand the best way to manage his rotation and to actually manage his team, which unfortunately that hasn't been something he's been able to do so far. Let's start with the point guards on this team, and obviously that means we're going to start with Kyle Lowry, who was absolutely on fire to start the season. There was no doubt about that. He was fantastic, and a lot of people were really down on him in last offseason, thinking, yeah, it was a contract year, we're not going to draft him that high, and the numbers he put up were crazy. That was so, so good. Then he had that injury, which really bothered him. It kept him out for quite a significant amount of time, obviously with that back problem. Ended up costing him 12 games overall, and when he came back, he just wasn't the same guy, and that's evidenced by his rankings. Per game for the season, he's 16th, but if we look post-All-Star, 34th. Like it's, it might not seem like much, 16 to 34, but if you ever look at rankings and the difference in guys, the difference between, say, the first and second round is huge, and then second and fourth round is pretty big as well. The gap is big at the top, so that's a significant drop-off. And that 16th rank per game for the season takes into the account that he was the 34th best player for the last 2 months. So, you know, if we look at the start of the year, he was a lot better than that. He was, you know, pushing top 15, top 12 sort of numbers. Overall, his numbers, they're pretty good. Almost 18 points, almost 2 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.5 steals, 81 from the free throw line, a 41% shooter from the field, and that's what we come to expect from him. But what really happened to him is his shooting dropped off significantly. The last 2 months, he shot just 37% from the field, which is, you know, it impacts his field goal percentage. Obviously, it also impacts his points per game. His assist numbers dropped as well, and they're the two main things that really happened to him. His scoring, his field goal percentage, and his assist numbers dropped in that second part of the season. He was playing less minutes as well, only 33 minutes after the All-Star break, despite averaging 35 for the season. I don't think it's got anything to do with contract or anything like that. We saw at the start of the season how good he was. Where do we look to him for next season? You're probably not taking him inside the top 20, but I reckon he's a pretty decent third-round pick. You might even be able to snag him in the fourth round because people will be a little bit down on what he did. And people are really quick to always jump on Kyle Lowry no matter what happens. If he has any sort of bad game, he's just not someone who's given a whole lot of leeway or not forgiven very easily. I don't really know why that is. Maybe it's, you know, part of his reputation of, you know, arguing with coaches and being a bad teammate and all that sort of stuff. Maybe that's part of it. But as soon as he has a bad game or a bad stretch, people are really quick to jump off Kyle Lowry. So with the way he ended last season, you know, not playing that well, you might find that people heading into next season, you know, are looking at him as a player ranked in the 40s, which I think is too low. And if you're able to grab him in the 40s, that's a pretty good bargain, I think. Gravis Vasquez, the general, really disappointing from him. Now, he was a guy that, you know, we started off last season, 2013-14 in Sacramento as the starting point guard ahead of Isaiah Thomas and was putting up decent numbers. Came across to Toronto and obviously that hurt his value. But even when Lowry was out, he was never really able to get stuff going. Now, he played all 82 games, so that was handy. That gave him a roto rank of 139 for the season and a head-to-head total rank of 131. But if we look on a per-game basis, 203, it's not that good. Now, down the stretch, he did play extra minutes. He got up to a ranking of 151 in per-game value. But his overall numbers in 24 minutes, 9.5 points, 3.7 assists, and that's something where he usually excels is giving out those assists. 1.5 threes is a really good number. But overall, even when given the opportunity, he just didn't impress. He didn't thrill. He didn't like, yeah, this is a guy who should be a starting player in this league. I don't think anyone really thinks that anymore. He's got 1 year left on his contract. He's got $6.5 million owed to him, which is not a terrible contract. He's probably not going to get that deal again when he comes up for free agency after next season. But he's still a valuable backup piece. Just that when he jumps into a starting lineup, at this point, he doesn't become a lock for 10-team leagues. He's a partial lock for 12-team leagues. And part of that, I think, is to do with the fact that Toronto also has Lou Williams there. So that reduces, you know, Vasquez's ability to handle the ball. If he was in another team, say, without that third option of Williams as a guard off the bench who can run point as well, maybe his value would be a little bit more impressive or a little bit more, a little bit bigger. But in Toronto, with Lowry and with Williams, which we'll get to in a second, it makes him a little bit, not useless, but partially superfluous, I think is probably the best way of putting it. Let's talk Lou Williams now, who was a massive surprise packet. He was extremely hot for the start of the season, cooled off slightly, but not really that much. Total ranking head-to-head, I think a lot of people would be shocked that Lou Williams was the 51st ranked player. Now, he did play 80 games. Per game, 82, though. So that means that every league should have been owning Lou Williams. He only played 25 minutes a game. So we look at per 36 value, he's the 18th ranked player. That's obviously really good. 15.5 points, almost two triples, over a steal a game, only two assists, but a nice 86% free throw, 40% from the field. So overall, the numbers, they don't look that good. You know, you get points is pretty good. Three-pointers, that's good. Steals, good. Free throws, good. But assists, rebounds, obviously no blocks, field goal percentage. Yeah, the numbers turn out, the overall ranking numbers turn out good, but overall his value is concentrated into certain areas. You know, free throws, threes, points, and to a much lesser extent, steals. Lou Williams is an unrestricted free agent after winning the Sixth Man of the Year award. He was paid just $5 million last year. I imagine he'd be looking for a bigger contract than that. I think Toronto would want to bring him back, but it's obviously not guaranteed at this point. If he doesn't come back, Vasquez's value rises and Vasquez becomes an end of a 12-team league guy. I think Williams is, despite this high ranking, I don't think he's a top 100 player next season. He could be. He could comfortably be a top 100 player, but I'm not 100% convinced that he is. He's a definite for 12-team leagues, and he probably is a definite for 10-team leagues, to be honest, in picking in the last couple of rounds. But I'm not grabbing him around 50 or around 60 or anything like that. I think that's way too high for a guy, unless you've just gone and you really need the points, because he is one of those guys towards the end of the draft that provides points when there's not normally a huge amount of players who are available after, say, pick 60 or 70 that can provide points like he can. So he has value in that sort of sense. Shooting guards. DeMar DeRozan, as you heard referenced in the song at the start from Royce the 5'9", he disappointed as well, but he had that groin injury which cost him a lot of time. And injuries, you've heard me talk about this a lot, I'm convinced that they impact players more than the time that they miss. He played just 60 games and 35 minutes a game, and he was the Raptors' leading scorer, DeRozan, 20 points a game. He doesn't hit threes, half a three a game. But he gives you 4.6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 83 from the line, and 41 from the field. So he gives you pretty solid numbers. It was a decrease in what he did the season before, and a lot of that is because he played less minutes. Per game head-to-head, though, he was still ranked 67th. I think that he's going to be a bit of a surprise guy next season, because we saw post-All-Star break, he turned it up, 38th ranking. Now, I don't reckon you're going to need to take him inside the top 50 next year, but I reckon that's the sort of value that he can return. I think that he's going to be taken in that 50 to 75 sort of range, And I reckon taking him there might be a bit of a bargain. We hope that he stays healthy, but those points are extremely valuable. They're really nice rebound and assist numbers for a shooting guard. Shooting guard averaging 3.5 this season and 4 last season is pretty valuable. Great free throws on big volume as well. He's taking 7 free throws a game and hitting 83% of them. That's a pretty big deal. And I think that a lot of DeRozan's value drop this season was due to the injury and the fight he had coming back from it. We don't really remember how hot he was down the stretch. Well, not hot, but much better he was down the stretch. The last 2 months, he averaged 22 points a game. He had 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He shot the ball a bit better as well and got better and better as the season went on. The last 2 weeks, he averaged 25 points on 49% shooting. So he was a lot better. I don't have a problem taking him inside the top 50. And this is the thing that we need to remember with all these rankings is, I'll say, I've got no problem taking him inside the top 50. But if you look around and see ADP data and he comes out at ADP of 75, you don't take him inside the top 50. You wait, you take him 1 or 2 rounds above his ADP, and then you hope that he becomes a top 50 player. That's what it's all about. It's about, taking calculated risks and putting guys at the right spot based on where you think that they will go, not necessarily where you think they'll end up. It's a bit of a fine balance, and I think DeMar DeRozan is going to be one of those players next season that will go later than what his overall value will skew to. So keep that in mind when looking at drafts. Landry Fields. Ooh, remember this guy? Remember this guy as a rookie? Well, he was paid $6 million last year. That's ridiculous. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's not coming back at that price. He played 8 minutes a game for 1.8 points and 1 rebound. There's no future left for Landry Fields in this league, there's no future left for him to have any fantasy relevance at all. Even in a league that's 400 players deep, I don't think we need to be too concerned about Landry Fields. He had a good rookie season in New York, but completely lost in Toronto. And I think the Raptors will be pretty happy that he's coming off their books this season. Let's move across to the small forward position, and we'll talk Terrence Ross, a guy that started for them this season, and he was a disappointment too. He played just 26 minutes a game, 9.8 points, hits a lot of threes, 1.8, 2.8 rebounds though, not much else. 41-79 is his percentages, half a steal, 1 assist. But, this is my big but here for Terrence Ross, he was playing with ankle problems and he had surgery after the season on his ankle. Maybe that's a part of it. Maybe that's a big part of the decline from Terrence Ross. I think that he could have a real bounce back season. He was ranked 236th in head-to-head per game value, which is laughably bad. It is horribly bad. He's a pretty decent roto player, a better roto than head-to-head guy. Not by much, but he's not a complete, we need to avoid this guy in roto. But I think that the ankle is a real concern, or it was a real concern for him. And I can see him playing a bigger role next season. Now, does that mean that I think that you're taking him inside the top 100? Not a chance. He's a last couple of rounds guy in 12-team leagues, maybe a last round guy in a 10-team league, and he's a guy to watch in that first couple of weeks of the season on waiver wires to see, do we need to go and pick him up? Because he can be a guy who can get rebounds. He can obviously hit threes. He can score. He's got a pretty decent free throw percentage. He needs to improve the defensive side of his game, get those steal numbers up. But I think he's going to be somewhat of a sleeper sort of target for dynasty leagues if he comes off this ankle injury and plays well. It's not like the Raptors have got a huge amount of value or a huge amount of options at the small forward position. They could look to draft someone. They did draft someone last season, but we'll talk about Bruno in a sec. I think that Ross is going to have a fair chance to play 28 minutes or so at the three and definitely improve on what he was able to do. We look back to his season before that, which was better. 11 points a game, 2 triples a game, 3 rebounds, 0.8 steals, and 42-84 is his percentages. So it's not monstrously better, but it's significantly better. And the fact that he played all 82 games on this busted up ankle is it's good that he's able to push through those injuries, but I think that really did impact his ability to take over a game or show off his athleticism, which is a big part of his game. So he's someone that I'm looking to bounce back next season. Let's talk Bruno Caboolo. Had a question come, two questions come in about Bruno. One from Kevin Lappin, who's on Twitter, @KevinLappin. How long will Bruno's arms be when he finally stops growing? I'm tipping they're going to be pretty long. If you ever see this guy on the court, which you probably haven't because he played, how much did he play? 3 minutes a game in 8 minutes, so about 24 minutes for the season. His arms are pretty long. He's close to being able to tie his shoelaces without bending his knees. they literally come down past his hips, and that's great for his defensive abilities, for his ability to finish at the rim, all that sort of stuff. Obviously, that's not a fantasy impact question from Kevin, but Barry does ask one. Barry Baker, do you see Bruno making any contribution next season? And what kind of stats are you expecting in the long run from him? I do think he makes some sort of a contribution next season. As I said, we're going to be losing Landry Fields out of the rotation. Not that he was playing much, but that's 8 minutes there that Bruno could possibly get. So I think there is an opportunity for him to have some contribution. It might be 10 minutes a game. That's not much. But there'll be some contribution. Now, in the long run, I obviously think that Masai Ujiri likes Bruno as a player. I don't think he's going to be a fantastic scorer. I think we're looking at similar sort of stats on the similar sort of ratio of stats that Giannis Antetokounmpo provides. A guy who can get steals and get blocks. He can get rebounds with his long arms. His shooting obviously needs to improve a bit. It wasn't horrible, but 33% is obviously not ideal. We can't really read too much into his numbers from last season, though. Even when Bruno did play in the D-League, he didn't play a huge amount. He only played 7 games, played 9 minutes. But his per 36 D-League numbers, they look good. 14 points, 7.5 rebounds, half a steal, 3 blocks. That's obviously impressive, and that's where he's going to be. A guy who can get blocks, get rebounds, he can score when he finally gets to the NBA. He's probably not going to be a consistent contributor for another two seasons, I would say. But we'll see a little bit of improvement from him next season in terms of his overall output. I hope, anyway, because I do like him. Another guy I really like is James Johnson, who had stretches of being good, has stretches of being poor, only ended up playing 20 minutes a game, 8 points, 3.5 rebounds, but we know what he excels at, and that's blocks and steals. In 20 minutes a game, he got a block a game, 0.8 steals. Along with those other numbers, that's it's pretty good. Per game, 144th, even in those 20 minutes. So he was a guy that in 14-team leagues you needed to have a piece of. And when he was starting and getting big minutes, all our standard league guys needed to be a part of him. He had a game, I think it was against the Bulls, where he had 5 steals and 5 blocks, and that's the potential that he has. Now, the problem with playing him alongside, say, DeMar DeRozan, is that he doesn't hit threes. Neither does DeMar DeRozan. There's no floor spacing there. That's why he doesn't get the bigger minutes. Now, with Amir Johnson becoming a free agent, we could see James Johnson playing more of the four as a defensive guy, a rebounding guy, and then the floor spacing isn't quite as important. Play him next to Terrence Ross. That's obviously a very small lineup, but it's something that's not completely out of the realms of possibility. And if that happens, we should see his minutes going up from that 20 minutes a game to something a little bit more palatable from a fantasy point of view. I've always liked James Johnson as a player, and especially as a fantasy contributor. So we just need to see what sort of roster moves the Raptors make before we decide exactly what we're talking about with Johnson. But if he gets even a slight increase in his minutes, up to say 24 minutes a game, then he becomes a guy where 12-team leagues definitely need to pay attention to him, and 10-team leagues pay a partial credence to what he's doing in certain situations. He's not going to be a must-draft guy or anything like that, but there is a lot to like about James Johnson when he's given the opportunity. Let's move on to the big men, which is my major source of consternation with Dwayne Casey. I just didn't like what he was doing. It made no sense to me, a lot of the decisions that he made. We'll start with Amir Johnson, who is also an unrestricted free agent this season, and I think it's unlikely they bring him back. They paid him $7 million a year last year. He's plagued with chronic ankle problems. So it's a concern. Now, I like Amir Johnson as a player. But the way that his injury history is going and the way the Raptors are using him, it's not a great situation for him. He played 26 minutes a game, just 9 points, 6 rebounds, 0.6 steals, 0.8 blocks, a 57% shooter, and he can hit threes as well. He hit 0.3 threes a game at 41%, which is obviously a fantastic conversion. But the numbers are a significant dip on his last two seasons. Where he ended up ranking, 138th in per game value, 100 total for Roto, 108 total for head-to-head. But really struggled down the stretch. And the lack of minutes was a concern. The last 2 weeks of the season, he played just 18 minutes a game. I don't think that Dwayne Casey is a huge... I don't think Dwayne Casey is a huge fan of any of these big men, which is something we'll talk about pretty soon. But I can't see Amir Johnson being back. And as I mentioned with James Johnson, that's something that's going to give Johnson maybe some more run at the four. depending on where Amir lands, it's going to be hard to see him being part of 10-team leagues, and I think that his career trajectory is on the way down with all these ankle problems. Patrick Patterson, a man that Dwayne Casey apparently loves, played him 27 minutes a game, which is more than Amir Johnson and more than Jonas Valanciunas. Just let that sink in for a minute, that Patrick Patterson played more than the starter at the 4 and the starter at the 5. That's ludicrous to me. I do like Patrick Patterson. I think that he's got a pretty decent game, but come on, he shouldn't be playing more minutes than both of those guys. He averaged, in those more minutes, 8 points and 5.5 rebounds. Not good numbers, clearly. 1.3 triples, he's not a defensive presence. Half a block, 0.7 steals, 45 and 79%. So overall, I don't really understand it. Now, he's a really solid Roto player. There's no doubt about that. He was the 66th ranked player for Roto value overall. But head-to-head, not so much. 147th in per-game value. And he also struggled a little bit down the stretch. If Johnson was to leave, he's going to find himself in maybe a little bit of a bigger role or a more important role. But it's hard to recommend him for standard leagues, either even with the love that Casey seems to be giving him. He's more of a 12-team league guy. He's got probably a bit more upside than Amir Johnson at this point in his career, because he's a bit younger, because he's got the ability to play as a stretch four, which Johnson sort of does, but Patterson's more happy to take those long-range three. He's attempting 3.5 per game last season. What do we expect from him? Again, it all depends on what Ujiri does in terms of constructing this roster and re-signing and that sort of stuff. But I think that he's going to find himself in a decent role where 14-team leagues are going to definitely need a piece of Patrick Patterson. And if you're looking for big men for threes in the 12-team leagues, might want to pay attention to him. The other guy at power forward is Tyler Hansbrough. Psycho T played 14 minutes a game, 3.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, not much else. There was times when he was starting, never really made sense to me why he was starting and why he was starting for so long, but it happened. He's a guy who gets points and rebounds at a decent field goal percentage, and that's pretty much about it. So I don't think we need to be too worried about Tyler Hansbrough and his career trajectory from here. He is an unrestricted free agent. I think the Raptors would like to bring him back because they like a pest, they like his hustle. But fantasy players, we don't get any points for hustle. His head-to-head per-game value was 375, and even down the stretch when he was playing more, he was only ranked 228th. So there's not a lot to like for him. I think we've seen who he is and what he is, and I don't think that there's much scope for him to get much better. Another of the big men who's an unrestricted free agent is Chuck Hayes, who was paid $6 million last year. Yes, there were some terrible contracts on this team. 8.8 minutes he played a game. 1.5 points, 1.5 rebounds, not much else. Chuck Hayes is a solid veteran, and we saw maybe 2-3 seasons ago, even when he starts, you know, he can put up numbers. He had a triple-double at the end of the regular season about 2 or 3 seasons ago. He's a pretty decent passing big man, and averaged 0.7 assists in those nine minutes, but he's unlikely to continue to get minutes along that level, I would think anyway. Let's talk Jonas Valanciunas, a guy that just pissed me off. Not him, but the way that Dwayne Casey used him. It just frustrated me no end. In his 26 minutes a game, which I'll remind you is less than Amir Johnson and less than Patrick Patterson, Valanciunas played 26.2, Amir Johnson 26.4, Patrick Patterson 26.6. Valanciunas averaged 12 points, 8.7 rebounds, 1.2 blocks in 26 minutes. 57% shooter from the field, 79% from the free throw line, half a steal, half an assist, and we don't expect him to get assists, but it just doesn't make sense. Per 36, 16.5 points, 11.9 rebounds, 1.6 blocks. We're talking a really, really impressive fantasy guy. Even in that, you know, Dwayne Casey-led minute malaise, he was the 70th ranked player in head-to-head leagues in per game. In head-to-head total, 38th. Roto total, 52nd. The last month of the season, he was the 51st ranked player. He is a beast waiting to happen. If he got 35 minutes a game, he is a clear top 35 to 40 player. I've got no doubt about that in my mind. Dwayne Casey, this is why I want Dwayne Casey out, because he doesn't recognize that Valanciunas can be a beast now. He might actually recognize it next season and run with him big minutes, and then fantasy owners are going to rejoice. I've been waiting for this to happen for the last couple of seasons, but I'm constantly held back by Casey's stupidity. That makes it so hard to deal with him in drafts. I think that he's got to be taken inside the top 75. It has to be, even with limited minutes. Now, you hear this argument from people a lot of times, and especially regarding the Spurs, you know, last season, none of their starters play 30 minutes. which was true in 2013-14, and we heard that. But my point is, if they average numbers that put them inside the top 50 at 29 minutes a game, then you take them inside the top 50 at 29 minutes a game. Same with Valanciunas. If he's going to be a top 70 player at 26 minutes a game, then you take him in the top 70 at 26 minutes a game. And if he gets more minutes, it's a massive bonus. And there's definitely potential for him to go big. I think that people will be frustrated with him, and rightly so. And you might see him slip outside the top 70, but I don't reckon I'm letting him slip outside the top 55. I think there's a lot to like about Valanciunas. He can be a real star, and I think that there's a lot of dynasty value in him as well from people who may not recognize that there's this so much untapped potential with him, and a lot of that is untapped because the coach is putting a cork in it. Other centers on this team, Greg Steemsma. Well, he's Greg Steemsma. Not much to really talk about with him. He played 4 minutes a game. And hopefully we don't have to be talking about Greg Steemsma too much in fantasy point of view. He is an unrestricted free agent. And the main reason I don't want to talk about him is because I want to talk about Bebe Nogueira. Lucas Nogueira, the rookie center who was drafted by the Atlanta Hawks in the first round the year before and then traded as part of the Lou Williams deal. He's another guy I am really high on. And if you look at his numbers, you would have no idea why I would be. 4 minutes a game. 1 point, 1.8 rebounds, 0.3 steals, and shot 25% as a center. That's not really that good, is it? But I still think there's a lot of ability there for him. Now, with Valanciunas in the picture, he's not likely to be the starting center for this team at any point. But I reckon in 2 to 3 years' time, we can see him become a real valuable backup, especially with Chuck Hayes gone, with Greg Steemsma gone, with Amir Johnson likely gone. It's going to clear out some minutes. And Masai Ujiri did want this guy and brought him across, and yeah, they've got him and Bruno there as well, both Brazilians. I think it's an interesting situation for him. He played just 4 D-League games, but his per 36 D-League numbers are off the charts. 14.9 points, 18 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 3.6 blocks. That's off the charts. Now, he's probably not going to get those sort of minutes in the NBA, and he's going to be against different competition, but there's a lot to like about Lucas Nogueira for next season, well, not even for next season, for the next couple of seasons moving forward. His PER in the D-League was 23. There is a lot to like about him, and that's deep, deep dynasty when you're building for 3 years' time, that he can be a guy who plays 20 minutes, and you know, you pick him, you get him at value 400, and he provides you value at 200. He might not ever be a top 150 guy, but I think we could see a significant rise in what he is able to do over the next couple of seasons. So keep that name in mind. All right, that does it for the Toronto Raptors. Make sure you're checking out Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Keep up with all the posts that are coming out and all the podcasts. And the best way to keep up with the podcasts is obviously subscribing on iTunes and on Stitcher and leaving a review. I haven't been really pushing the review thing, but I know that the amount of people that are listening to the podcast and the amount of reviews up don't necessarily match up. So I'd really appreciate if you could spend a couple of minutes heading across to iTunes, leaving a review, and getting the podcast really pushed up higher in the rankings so that people find it. They find it a lot easier, and it appears very high in the rankings. So I'd really appreciate if you could do that one thing for me, is head across and give me that iTunes review. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.